Hello and welcome back to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. This week we're re-entering the Matrix in The Matrix Resurrections, so respawn Alan.
Hello Xavier, and of course hello to our favourite fans, welcome back to Mess Explores. Before we start to go down the rabbit hole and say goodbye to Kansas, remember as always our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we do contain spoilers. As Xavier said, we are looking at The Matrix Resurrections, which is a 2021 film directed by Lana Wachowski. Now Resurrections stars Keanu Reeves, Carrie-Anne Moss, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Jonathan Groff, Jessica Henwick, Neil Patrick Harris, and Jada Pinkett Smith, just to name a few. So without further ado, say, let's go straight into the film. What did you think?
Hated it. Just going to say it. This had very poor story development. There were weak characters, below average acting. The film was overly self-aware, you know, taking pot shots at the likes of Warner Brothers. It just felt a little bit lame. Using terms like sheeple, I mean, really, come on. Are we at that point now in our lives? You know, the Wachowskis now that pathetic and uninspired that this has now entered their world. Overall, the film felt it had about, you know, a dozen different great narrative opportunities, and it definitely did have some great opportunities, but it decided to take none of them. And, you know, this film had the potential to be the cinematic equivalent of a Black Mirror episode, but it failed to even be as good as one of the worst episodes of that series, in my opinion. And, you know, a classic case in point of this was, you know, Neo in the elevator while everyone else is on the phones. Then he simply left the elevator and nothing more was done with the concept. You know, there were so many of these little things throughout this film that I kept going, oh, we're going to go down this pathway. And it didn't. It just sat at this very superficial, surface level, dull, uninteresting, poorly executed sort of narrative level. And it was such a disappointment. And I think we're far enough after the original Matrix trilogy, and especially the original film, that, you know, we still have expectations of how good it was, but that, you know, those rose-tinted glasses have probably faded a little bit, because most of us have probably seen the Matrix films a number of times and are probably acutely aware that the original Matrix film, The Matrix, has actually dated relatively badly, some would argue. It's definitely not feeling as fresh as it used to. So I think a lot of us have come into this film with sort of new hopes and expectations that this will be its own thing in its own right and that it will wow us. And the only thing it wowed was how unbelievably dismal it was. How about you?
Well, I can see that you really enjoy the film, Sam. Now, look, straight off the bat, the film was very super meta. And I had a tough time trying to figure out where it fit in with the story I loved. Even within the story, Thomas Anderson's asked to make a part four for Warner Brothers against his will. And I can only imagine whether Lana had to go through something like this. Now, in my opinion, the Matrix trilogy is a cult favorite. Now, the first one blew our minds and freed us from conventional storytelling, and the second and third integrated the reliance of digital programming and our dependence on them to function as a race. But these motives were told through the narrative that arched over the three films, and I recently rewatched them all. And I guess with a more mature mind or an understanding of computer science, I actually appreciate the trilogy even more and what it was trying to do. Now, with such big shoes to fill, the benchmark is so high that even attempting to fill something like this is just going to be an epic effort. A lot of us who've seen this film might just think that, you know, this is just Warner Brothers' attempt at money-grabbing nostalgia, but other critics have said that this is also a commentary on that same money-grabbing nostalgia. So it's like being meta within another meta-analogy. And a modification and the modernization of the original film's philosophies, and I guess an incensed retort to those who were unable to comprehend them back then.
For me, that's an unbelievable reach for something overly simplistic, though. You know, anyone can read anything they want into a film, and this commentary notion is drawn from the fact that the film was self-aware, as I said, and took pot shots at the likes of the very studio that actually created it. And it was no secret that Warner Brothers had told the Wachowskis that they'd make the film with or without them. And that really drives home the fact that Warner Brothers was looking to make a buck off an old franchise and not expand a great deal on the narrative. Yeah, at the end of the day, The Matrix is a financial asset for them, and they are a business after all. So I think while some might think this film was trying to be clever in pointing out the obvious, it's sort of an oversimplistic view on what was already blatantly obvious anyway. And I think to point it out in the film just came across as dim-witted more than intelligent.
Yeah. I can definitely see what you're talking about there, Sam. And as I've explained before, the previous film was commenting on technology and how the role of the internet and how consumers were sort of using it. In this film, it seems to harp on about how the internet is actually manipulating us through algorithms. Now, the analyst himself seems to be a representation of the all-knowing algorithm, you know, similar to what Google and YouTube may use. Now, the film opens with the water reflection and the inverted image of the police walking in on the modal trinity. Now, I guess this is a way of saying that what we are being presented now is a reflection of what's come before. Richard Thelman from CNET actually shares the same sentiments by alluding to the original films have already played with layers of reality in, I guess, a postmodern self-reflective way. And Resurrections doubles down with, you know, layer upon layer of meta self-awareness. In fact, comparing it to the director's commentary actually be outdated and binary, maybe even analog. Resurrections is actually more like a re-recording and a remix of a classic album, but just done in space. The more and more I reflect, it becomes obvious that the film and Lana, the director, refuses to pander to the film's fans and what we want. In fact, Resurrections addresses the many and varied ways that the original film has been adopted and co-opted. It mocks the over-earnest assertions that the film's symbolisms and metaphors mean this or that, and rolls its eyes at those who have missed the point of the infamous red pill, which is basically the illusion of choice.
See, I disagree that these were narrative-driven ploys as opposed to the audience merely being spited by the creators.
Yeah.
It was in no way intelligent enough to me a believable or plausible continuation of the story. Instead, it just felt like a creator determined to throw their toys out of the pram because they were forced to do something they didn't want to do, and they figured if they broke it enough, then it would cease to be financially viable and Warner Brothers would drop their pursuit of the franchise. Now, if as a creator you create something so engaging and thought-provoking that for decades to come people still talk about it, then to take a swipe at that same audience is simply to insult them, and it reeks of pious sanctimony. As I said before, you know, series such as Black Mirror have thoroughly expanded on these concepts in sometimes stupendously brilliant ways, whereas to find anything of great merit in this film borders on simply stupid and desperate. Now, I think, as a creator, if Wachowski is going to be pious and sanctimonious about their creation, then essentially they can kind of go to hell, for lack of a better word. Warner Brothers doesn't need them, certainly doesn't need someone like that peddling something against the audience. And if they've got the ability to make something good, then they should just make something good in its own right and not try to have this pretentious sort of pseudo-meta world that people are trying to find meaning for, because I think people are trying to find meaning in something that really wasn't there, because I felt like this was a pious, pretentious, and sanctimonious attempt at a film where they were hell-bent on destroying it.
Okay, I'm going to chuck in another perspective here, or even an additional sort of thought process, is the absence of her sister directing. Now, irrespective of how people may feel about the trilogy, I guess it's important to note that it was done through the creative lenses of the two sisters. Now, when you attempt to make a fourth installment without one of its co-creators, I always get anxious because what is delivered may not be what we would have gotten if both were working together. So apparently, like, the sisters actually went through a tough time, and this is not anything to do with their transitioning, but they actually lost both of their parents 5 weeks apart. And when Lana took on the project, I guess it was sort of like reuniting fictional characters that were close to her, as her parents were. But when Lily was asked to explain, I mean, in an interview, like, she felt like the Matrix franchise struck a different note for her. Rather than offering comfort, revisiting the storyline would have actually made her feel like it was emotional labor.
Yeah, and that's completely understandable. I mean, at the end of the day, people go through all sorts of things in their personal lives, and that's fine. But I think in that case, the conversation probably should have gone down the path of, we either do it together or and we do it properly, or we don't do it at all, and we let go of this franchise because it's traumatic for one or both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't deliberately draw the audience into your messed up lives because you're feeling spiteful or bitter about something and only one of you wants to do it or the other half doesn't, or you're sort of twisting the arm of the other person. And that's really what this film came across as.
Yeah, exactly.
At least to my viewing.
You're right, Save. Don't do a half-assed job. And I guess this is, well, it's hard to sort of say if the other sister was involved, but it doesn't look like it from a narrative perspective.
Oh, perhaps not. But I think that's the thing, though. Whether they were or not, or whether there was, you know, potentially conversations around the kitchen table, you know, who knows? But I find it very hard that they would both be completely separate from it. Or, you know, if one of them would be completely separate from it to the extent where they wouldn't even talk about what was going on.
Yeah.
That would speak to a much larger family grievance and personal issues in the background, which again would sort of reiterate, if this is such a contentious issue for the two of them, then why did one of them go it alone, except to spite the studio and stick it to them, essentially, as the line pretty much said in the film. And yeah, that bothers me. But sort of moving away from the, you know, the personal life of the Wachowskis and, you know, whatever messed up nonsense is going on in the background, within the film universe, there was another number of other things that bothered me throughout this film. And one of the really big ones was actually the character of Naomi.
Yeah.
Now, this was the most pathetic attempt at aging someone I think I've ever seen in film. It was absolutely hopeless. And whoever was responsible for this should have been shot. why make the film 60 years in the future if you can't pull it off properly? 15 years would have sufficed and had no real impact on the story, and we wouldn't have had to deal with any of this ridiculous age-related nonsense for the characters, because this was a flaw that popped up in a number of the characters throughout the film, but most overtly was Niobe, because she was the only one that actually bothered to try and age and did it badly. How do you feel about that?
Look, I'm on board with you here. There was no reason to make this film so far in the future, and there was no reason to make Niobe so old. I personally didn't have a problem with how she looked, because, you know, I guess it's, you know, like we've seen CGI, we've seen sort of practical makeup. It wasn't like near the here or there for me. But what I did have a problem with is to make a character who we've seen to bend the rules and to hate authority, and then now adopt that same authority herself when she's in that position of power, was an interesting adaptation. I think I like that concept that time sort of adapts our wisdom to change our perceptions to highlight what's important. And Niobe sort of evolved from freeing minds to recultivating crops and sustaining Io.
Look, that part of the story didn't bother me so much. I can very easily look at something and go, over 60 years, your priorities and beliefs and whatnot are going to change a little bit. They are going to adapt. And, you know, in her situation, going from Zion to Io and, you know, finding this new world and different problems and stuff, you know, you have to adapt. You have to sort of bring yourself into the future or you get left behind. And I think that was a little narrative they sort of went on about with the old council and Morpheus and how they refused to sort of get out of their own ways and their old mental models. You know, they got consumed by their unwillingness to change. So from a narrative perspective, I didn't have a great issue with the fact that her character slightly changed a little bit. And her character was always a little bit of a stickler in the original trilogy as well. I guess my issue really was the fact that it was 60 years ahead of time and the sort of issues that created for the sort of visual aspect of this film. It didn't lend anything to the narrative.
No.
Because you could have had those same problems in a 15-year window and not had to age any of the characters whatsoever because they've all aged 15 years in reality.
Yeah, I think it was like the director's attempt to sort of back up her narrative, to sort of say, look, it's taken 60 years for the machines to fight amongst themselves.
Or it was the director's attempt to make sure the film definitely tanked with rubbish CGI and poor narrative.
Most likely.
But, you know, sticking with this poor narrative element, one thing that really bothered me, and I know this has bothered a lot of people, and I saw this film with a number of other people as well, and this kind of bothered everyone. You know, whilst this is all going on, Neo and Trinity are seemingly ageless. Now, there was a really weak plot filler here for a major hole, and this was that the machines rebuilt them. Why would the machines give a single care about what Neo and Trinity look like, let alone somehow installing new eyes in Neo when he doesn't really need them, he's in a jar and whatnot? You know, this is the laziest writing I've ever seen. Mm. And, you know, we've even got these stupid robots are our friends narrative with the cutesy little ones fist bumping people. I mean, this was like it was based on the crappiest parts of the Transformers franchise. It was just an absolute embarrassment.
Yeah. Look, imagine seeing the film with an old Neo. I think the studios thought that it wasn't the final Wolverine movie where old man Logan was passable and it fits into the narrative. I think this just highlights the pressures that the studios put on the creators to churn out, I guess, any old garbage to sell tickets. Or, I guess, was it the old lazy writing of a retired creator, like you mentioned before?
Yeah, as I said before, I think it was, you know, a creator that couldn't be bothered and wanted to deliberately sink a franchise with a studio that wanted to just churn out something else to make a buck. But, you know, further along with this sort of robot nonsense, you know, the floating hollow bots, you know, what the actual hell was going on there? I can't decide if this was based on a concept of silicon magnetics from an early episode of Sequest DSV when aliens were projected onto the submarine, or the silly projection of the consciousness from iRobot. I mean, this film just reeked of bad assets taken from other sort of questionable sources that just don't fit this narrative.
I actually had more issues with the machines looking like animals and creatures. Like, there's this aesthetic creepiness to the Sentinels, and there's a Bauhaus function to the way they look and the way they perform. But it looks like, or they look like, what I would imagine machines building other machines to look like in this specific post-apocalyptic era. But these new creatures that we are introduced to in this fourth rendition just make no sense. Like, it's like they look like animals and creatures. I'm like, why are the machines building these other machines, you know, to look aesthetically pleasing? It actually makes no sense. And as for the Holobots you've mentioned, there is an attempt at a basic explanation, but then it just stopped. Like, he just goes, oh, but the science is astounding. And then he just sort of stops in the film. And it's like, well, you're going to explain this, or are we just going to just take your word for it?
Ooh. And, you know, you had more of these sort of creepy iRobot elements here, such as when there was that sort of floating holobot thing helping in the greenhouse, where it's sort of this humanoid floating thing. And it just reminded me so much of the robots from iRobot, you know, when they were sort of helping people and caring for them and whatnot. I'm like, it's this weird pseudo-humanoid anthropomorphic nonsense. And whether the robots are sort of at peace with humans or whatnot, why do they suddenly all look like humans as well? Mm. Don't tell me for a second everything was programmed to look like a human. I mean, we are talking about basic functionality in software and some of these things. And yeah, some of them look like fish, some look like birds. I'm like, have they taken, you know, some of the flying pterodactyls out of the Power Rangers films? I mean, this is just ridiculous. But, you know, more things that just were just wrong with this film just across the board, and this was a really big one. It was, why was Neo castrated to the point where he was a feeble Jedi who could only force push things away rather than actually engage in actual combat? Neo, after suddenly and inexplicably being comprehensively castrated, finds that Trinity is somehow now the one with all the powers. I mean, come on, get out of here. If you're going to play that card, you need to explain it, the same as with all the robots and all this other rubbish. Otherwise, it's as irrelevant and meaningless to an outsider as a Wachowski sex change, which, let's be honest, was probably the so-called meta meaning behind this narrative element in the first place. But the arrogance to place themselves in the position of having been Neo, then become Trinity, just reeks of a deranged creator with a god complex. And I have zero patience for any creator with such blatant egocentric tendencies, no matter what film they're making.
Whoa, okay. Look, I completely agree. This did not make any sense. Now, they do try and explain it a little bit, but it's a bit of a hypocritical or flawed explanation where they say he's been in there so long that his mind's been nulled. But that should be the same process for Trinity herself. So there's no explanation. There's no reason. And like, we're just left to sort of be like, okay, well, it's not Neo's movie. It's a Trinity's movie. And I guess it's sort of to highlight the importance of her character to cultivate his strength, I guess.
But this is the dumb thing, though. If his mind has been sort of numbed because he's been in there so long, so he's lost the powers he had. In theory, she should have been just as numbed at the same ratio. Exactly. Except she never had any powers to begin with, but somehow she's become all powerful. This was just rubbish. And you know, something else I'd actually like to harp on about a little bit here, which was the character of Agent Smith. Now, you know, this is one of the most awful renditions ever from an aesthetic standpoint. You know, he'd become some stupid, pretentious, wannabe corporate hipster that probably only drinks chai lattes and, you know, throws his shoes at people. It just didn't make any sense. But with that said, how did Smith even get back into the Matrix?
Yes, great question. And bloody hell, I don't know the answer to this, because I thought he made a deal in the last movie where he's a virus and the machines had to destroy Smith. So I thought, you know, like the whole fight scene was him, I guess, the antivirus fight scene. It's the best way to explain it. So I thought, you know, I thought Smith is actually destroyed. Now, the only possible thing that I can think about is in this modal that he's created for like programs to evolve using other programs, I guess the way he's created Morpheus, he's also created Smith based on his code that he knows. So it's not the real Smith. It's just it's the same rendition of Morpheus. That's the only explanation I've got.
I got a better explanation. Hugo Weaving read the script for this film and went, hell no. This is garbage.
Yeah, possibly.
And look, sticking with the lazy onslaught that we're sort of slamming this film for, the character is Satie. Now, that was a really lazy narrative movement tool in here. And with this ridiculous concept of her looking into Dumbledore's pensive to actually see what was going on while they stand around like these woodland creatures in Narnia. What the hell?
Yeah, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. I don't even know why she's aged. I thought she's a program. So I thought you would have the same physical appearance. Like, I don't know. It was just lazy writing.
And she was this weird Power Rangers Transformer thing floating around outside of the Matrix. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And, you know, furthermore, swarm mode. Are we serious? Yeah, you know, where everyone becomes a bot. It reminded me of that stupid Charlize Theron moment in the Fast and Furious 8 where she made all the cars swarm the limousine. I was sitting there like, oh my God, this is so lame.
Look, I guess the only explanation for this specific mode is previously in the first three movies, they've got a plug into the phone line, you know, with ADSL and et cetera, and with dial-up and the advent of the internet, that's what they had to do back then. Now, I guess the theory is the reason why they can go through the mirrors is because everyone's always connected all the time. So I guess this sort of swarm mode is just the programs is hacking the actual matrix itself on a faster scale. I'm not too sure. I can't even give you a scientific explanation or a computer science explanation for that.
Well, it's like Windows Defender on steroids. It's like, well, let's take the resources and machine and actually try and combat whatever this erroneous bit of code is. But by the same token, it's code written by the analyst, essentially probably mostly to keep the likes of Neo in line, who's otherwise castrated in every way imaginable anyway and kind of uses his powers, which if the analyst is this all-seeing, all-knowing, then he's kind of aware of the fact that Neo doesn't really have his powers unless he touches hands or gets close to the likes of Trinity, in which case they have a moment like Charlize Theron and Will Smith in Hancock, where suddenly they cancel each other out and all hell breaks loose. But again, that's just another bad film trope that appears in this film.
Well, speaking of bad film tropes, this is the same thing with the Merovingian, right? He makes an appearance for no reason. At the start, they say that he's been deleted or they've been purged, and so somehow that he's been saved, or he's found some backdoor channels to sort of like copy his code, and he's able to come back, but not in the same form. It's all a bit confusing. They don't talk about the Oracle or the previous architect. It's all like, well, like what's happened to all these other important characters?
Well, the thing with the Merovingian, though, that was just absolutely laughable. I mean, he stood there like an absolute hobo just talking smack and then disappears. I mean, what an absolute wasted opportunity of a character it was in this film.
Yeah.
They could have done so much with these deleted characters. That could have been where Smith came from. He could have the Merovingian. He could have actually been as powerful and influential in some other way, sort of almost like the dark web version of the Merovingian. But again, they did nothing. They just squandered every single opportunity they came up with.
Yeah, it's terrible. This film was just undercooked, underdeveloped. It was raw.
It was. It was so raw, it felt like they were still at the boardroom, sitting around the table phase of just, let's throw out every crap idea we can think of and then decide what to do. But instead of filtering them through, they just went, okay, we've got 200 crap ideas, let's all do all of them, but we've only got 30 seconds to spend on each one. And they just went, yep, sounds like a great film. And that's what bothers me. And that's why I feel like this film was intentionally made to tank Warner Brothers.
Oh, they should have learned. Just leave things alone.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move into cinematography, Zane?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, one of the biggest pet peeves I had in this, and I think others have probably had this too, was a constant use of footage from the original film. Now, I know this isn't strictly cinematography, but I'm going to lump it in here because it was taxing, tedious, lazy, pathetic, and mostly irrelevant, except for the fact that it seemed to be their attempt to polish this turd by reminding us how good the old one was and hope it would rub off on this one, because then they'd, in a number of scenes, actually done some shot matching in a vain attempt to ram it home, such as, you know, the shot from the underside of the helicopter with the bullets raining down or whatnot. But even when you watch them side by side, having watched the old one and then the new one within the same film, you still looked at the old footage and went, so much better than this film. What the hell are they doing in this one? You know, there was also the fact that the action in this film was absolutely dismal. Irrespective of whether that was a creative decision, and I'm using air quotes there, folks, or not, as some have said, you know, this wasn't just horrible compared to the rest of the Matrix franchise. I can live with a different style of action, but this was utterly appalling by any cinematic measure since 1965.
Look, leaving the story aside and just having a look at the cinematography by itself, there were some great nostalgic sequences that took the fans back to the original trilogy. But if I was to take the action on its own, I guess it was good. Like, you know, it was enjoyable. But it's hard to push the envelope after, you know, you give us a slow motion bullets and these memorable nostalgic scenes after a 15-year gap. Other films have had the opportunity to do so much in the absent time, and now for Resurrections to push the boundaries was near impossible. The shoehorning of old content's justification can be stretched by pointing out the narrative, I guess, but the narrative shouldn't have been so blatantly meta. Now, John Greta, the visual director, or the visual effects designer, sort of says in the interview for the Wall Street Journal, he says, "We went from pulling off what seemed to be impossible to a sort of inability to create surprise." And I completely agree with him, because you've done all you can. There's nothing else that this specific narrative has where you can push the envelope. So you're basically stuck.
Yeah. But I think this is the thing, though. Even if they'd just done what they'd done in previous films, as they did a little bit in this, it would have been better than just feeling like they didn't even try at all.
Mm.
Because this felt like they couldn't be bothered choreographing scenes, so they just had the likes of the Merovingian just yelling rubbish to try and hide the fact that they hadn't actually filmed any fight scene. And that sort of carried out throughout this entire film. Even scenes on the train to Japan. There was, you know, a couple of kicks here and there and someone flies out a window. Big Whoop. I literally see better than that on television shows these days. Yeah. I expect a damn sight better from a film like The Matrix. Yeah.
Well, let's give our final thoughts, Dave, on this film and wrap it up.
All right. So this film, Resurrections, was basically resurrecting a dead body, but it stayed a dead body. It was as rotten and vile as ever. You know, this film suffered a fate worse than that of Star Wars did at the hands of Disney, in my opinion. And I didn't think a franchise could be ruined any more comprehensively than Disney did. But at least it wasn't an affront to the brand by the original creator. This Wachowski attempt had all the hallmarks of a creator who wanted to kill off their own franchise and do so with utter spite and disdain along the way. The film reeked of a Wachowski out to make a buck, but intent on burying their bridges on the way out.
Yeah.
Now, this film was soulless, aimless, pointless, underwhelming, underdeveloped, weak, and misguided. Fortunately, its release is so far after the first original Matrix film, we can actually completely disregard the existence of this one and forget about it entirely. So if the Wachowskis want to see it sink, I'm more than happy to punch a hole in their hull. But to my mind, they'll be drowning along with this heap of a turd as well. And I'm giving it 1.5 out of 10.
Oh, jeez. Now, some critics point out how a world weary and aged Neo suffocates from being surrounded by people who can't stop talking about his game or him or how great of a creator he is. Now, I guess, is this another meta take on what The Matrix as a whole represents? Is this what it was like for Keanu and Lana like all these years? The first half of Resurrections is a moderate take on sci-fi simulations and a more ominous analysis of art under capitalism, a reflection on the artistic tendency of resurrecting one's lucrative artwork people keep talking about, even if the creator doesn't want to. There is an assertive dissertation on the predicament of funneling content into a voraciously consumeristic nature of our current digitalized age, especially at the advent of the metaverse. Now, the film had the potential to be great and even take on new bold avenues, but the film and the creator were so enthralled with being better than the original, they may have missed the audience they were catering towards. However, if it was a middle finger to the studios, I'm sure this was well received. So it's for all these reasons I'm going to give this film a 5 out of 10, simply just to be in the middle.
Fair enough. Look, I don't think they were enthralled with being better than the original. I think if your meta version is correct, they were intentionally trying to be worse than the original so that they weren't talked about. But who knows? That's a meta thing. Anyway, that's all from us, folks. And remember, you can let us all know what films you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on our socials. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye from us.
Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe, guys. And we'll see you all next week.